Blog Talk Radio. welcome into the darkness. Here you can richly paint in the outer limits of your voice, where dark ink becomes an odyssey of the imagination, told in crashing waves of turmoil as emotions are awakened and set to canvas in haunting fashion. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is our dark poetry night. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics in poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex.
Hello, what's up?
Oh, let's see. Well, all in all, life is good. You know, I'm here getting ready to dig into some dark poetry, hang out with you. Who knows, maybe another cool poet or two. You just never know what's going to happen. I have to say the weather is improving greatly. I feel a contentment with life. That's a good word, contentment. And how about you? What's up with you?
Not much. Nice weather.
Yeah, that's always good. That's always good. Oh, my goodness. Yesterday, I made a Hungarian mushroom soup, and it turned out so freaking good. Like, and there was no complaints about it in my household. And I served it up with some ciabatta bread. Good stuff. Good comfort food. So, you know, I'm envious of your nice weather. I'm hoping eventually we'll have a day or two of that. And, you know, you never can tell. Now, speaking of this show, the dark show, the contest we ran, what I simply did is there was no specific theme. There's no specific artist or poet being featured. I just went online and I started looking at dark art, and specifically a lot of it I looked at was dark fantasy art, and I just grabbed a few paintings that I like. So basically the theme of tonight, show is dark poetry inspired by art that Pam Ray liked. So, not much of a theme, but hey, it worked to get us 21 rights, a nice full board, and some good quality darkness. So, I'm definitely looking forward to this. All right. And speaking of which, Rex, what do you got for us first?
Let's the Concubine and Court Jester by Incubus Sue. She watches time, feeling sublime, as the fool winds the clock. Her fingers stroke each heart she broke, their beat, her ticking talk. Keeper of days, upon men preys, her jester turns blind eyes. She tastes the soul she softly stole, and feasts upon his eye lies. Red silken dress, made to impress, to steal away their will. Her loyal clown runs their time down, as with kindness she kills. Her lust for life, a sharpened knife, its edge tainted with sin. The mime holds court as her consort, leading the next one in. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like the inner and end rhyme of this. I thought that was really well done. I like how there's almost a deity-like, a goddess of death type feel to this female character. And yet, you know, it can also work on the level of just simply being a woman, a Black Widow type woman. I really like this all the way through, but to me, Keeper of Days upon men prays or just returns blind eyes. She tastes the soul she softly stole and feasts upon its lies. I like how this talks about somebody who takes and takes for themselves and uses other people. I also feel like there's something about the idea of the jester, the consort, the clown, her loyal clown, being almost like time itself, a representation of time itself, or maybe, you know, I don't know, I suppose maybe she could be time. And he could be the fool that bends over backwards and hope that time will treat him right. I think it's just absolutely an intriguing write. And like I said, well done format-wise and just very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful job of reading that. Your thoughts?
Well, the title is misleading, Concubine and Court Jester. That's just a kind of a note to what is as opposed to what was supposed to be. This is the sort of she might have been the concubine at one time, being part of a harem maybe, or just someone taken as the wife, so to speak. But the court jester was once the king, so now she's risen to the point of power where she holds everything in her hand. So this is the ultimate in cuckoldry. Not only has he been reduced by the fact that she's sleeping with anyone and everyone she wants, but he, as the king, has also been reduced in power to the point where he does everything that is asked of him, which is being put into the point where he is now the consort and she holds all the power.
I like, you know what, that is a really good point because, yeah, you just, as you were commenting, you reminded me of this video I watched on YouTube about, like, there's about history and about the amount of power that the court jesters had. They were the information that they were trusted with. And so, yeah, there is that whole idea of that, that reducing of power to the point where even the king himself has no more control. So just a great comment there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
Turn Back the Hands of Time by Duncan Doris. That is yours.
All right. Turn Back the Hands of Time by Duncan Doris. And it goes like this. Please turn back the hands of time back to when I was in my prime. The long red silk dress I used to wear, dancing for men who were in despair. The gorgeous face smiling in the mirror, time stole that, it could not be clearer. Smooth, even skin used to be my face, wrinkles have now taken their place. My feisty hair that was black and sleek, peppered now, playing hide and seek. I want my youth back, my paradigm, so please turn back the hands of time, end poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
A melancholy ode to what was once a pristine time that she thoroughly enjoyed, but it kind of hits on that note that time has not been very kind, as hits on that sort of a peppered black hair, wrinkles taking their place. Time stole so that look in the mirror is no longer a clear thought. And Well, that long silk red dress probably no longer fits at all. In fact, it's probably stuffed somewhere back in the closet because she don't want to see what the figure that once got into it looked like as opposed to what it does now.
Absolutely, yeah. And melancholy was a perfect word to describe this. And, you know, the idea of how things change, they don't fit quite right, wrinkles show up. But, you know, now this picture here, the painting she chose, which was the same one Ingvis wrote to, we have a few that, the first few, I think a lot of the rights are to this particular painting. And that was because I think I only originally had three prompts in, and then I ended up putting more in. So then we got right to other ones, but this was a particular favorite. Now, like, for me, like, what I see in this is the whole idea of who someone's power and self-confidence completely came from their looks. They had nothing else to depend on. They knew that it was their looks that got them what they wanted. It was how they stepped up the ladder. And when they could no longer do that, when their looks were no longer appealing, they really lost their sense of self. And that's, I think, where the melancholy comes in, the sense of despair. You know, this just a wonderfully rhyming couplet and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Harvester of the Damned by Beatnik. Her wicked blade of obsidian from the fires of hell doles out indiscriminate slaughter to female and male, never pausing to consider the consequences to her victims or their kin. Eternal damnation be the wages of sin. She trudges over corpses and bones. She wears the stench of death like a heady cologne. Once an angel, she is the harvester of the damned. She's the facilitator of the devil's game plan, marking man and woman for death. To the flames of hell, from the very last breath, she gains strength with every kill. If the Lord doesn't take you, she surely will. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. This was a picture of like a warrior type looking woman walking through a field of skeletons holding a giant sword. I really like fantasy art that makes women look like badasses. It's some of my favorite kind, you know. And I like how this tells a story but isn't particularly long, but you really get a feel for them. And if you look at the prompt too, with the painting that's written to, the opening lines really capture the imagery of the sword, her wicked blade of obsidian from the fires of hell. And I like how he goes deeper into the story, you know, with this simple couplet or the lines of once an angel, she is the harvester of the damned, she's the facilitator of the devil's game plan. You get a really strong feel for the idea of who she once was and what she became and how she's just really a pawn in a game. And I also really like the end line. She gains strength with every kill. If the Lord doesn't take you, surely she will. So either way, you're doomed, you know, there's almost a kind of a dark, twisted humor to me in those end lines that either way you're getting taken and you better hope it's not by her. So excellent story style poem and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
A reaper of a different kind, a black side to a Valkyrie. You're not going up. You're definitely not going to spend time at the table with Odin. You're going to go down to hell where you belong. So she is obviously has done her worst while alive, and now continues to that path of destruction by working her worst and taking those who surely walk within her realm. I like that thought with the, it is short, but it's because of the chosen language. A blade of obsidian from the fires of hell was a nice touch that hits out on the thought of its sharpness, and it'll stay sharp within its use because of what it is. Doesn't hold a sense of morality, doesn't pause, doesn't matter who the victims are or their kin, and it is a matter of it is their time, and she is there to do one thing, and that is harvest. She is that which all should be afraid of if they have walked an immoral life.
Absolutely. Great observation. I like that you brought up, like you said, a reaper of a different kind, and how, you know, she doesn't, you know, stop to pause. She doesn't think. It's just, you know, the life she lives, she goes after those who live the same kind of life. She collects those wages of sin, which brings me to, I really liked also the second line, doles out indiscriminate slaughter to female and male. And you mentioned then the whole idea of how it doesn't matter if the victims are poor or rich, you know, whatever consequences they deserve, she will give to them. So just a great comment and observations there, Rex. And what do we have next?
We have Hello Darkness, My Old Friend by Eric Svensson. You got a sound card.
All right, here we go.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. No glitch, hieroglyph hiatus over. Harlequin hand ventures forth. Twitter tweak of crimson effluorage. Double helix DNA strings calibrate. Cogs and sprogs replaced by analog precision. Digital thoughts manifest. Black opal memories. Studious obsidian timepiece eyes study. The ruby electra abides. Electrifies the darkness. Beware, she's a laser ball that creates static. Mermaid became a landlubber. Dreary depth of cobalt ocean bedrock relinquished. Siren song clearer on terra firma. Darkness dissipates. Ruby electra abides. Elocution of classic curves tweak DNA strings. Body clock unction. Sanction sensual severity. Dexterity dances deft deliberate nuances. Begin the beguen. Slave to sensuality's rhythm. Ruby electra rides. Smitten harlequin. Can't stop the clock. Laser ball static spills over. Ensnares saints, savants, and servants. No twisted sobriety. Silken smooth sensuality beguiles. Smiles in the face of adversity. Beholding eyes sanction beauty. Feast on feminine supremacy. Lamb to the altar led. No glitch. Hieroglyph hiatus over. Harlequin hand ventures forth in poems.
Wonderful read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're not able to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry and your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
I'm going to go into deliberate movement of time, and it is ever forward moving. So no matter who and what you are, you always walk within that realm. The Ruby Electra hits on a different note. Mermaid became a landlubber. Dreary depth of cobalt ocean bedrock relinquished. Sirens sound clear on terra firma. Kind of adds to the note that that she should be the that siren should be the notation to how time moves, and you fall within that power of the tick-tock itself. So it becomes that siren song of always bleeping out the day through its notes. And it hits on the smitten harlequin can't stop the clock, lays the ball, static spills over, and snares saints, savants, and servants. So, again, walking into that thought of the mermaid. Everybody falls prey to that which spills easily, and that is always time.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, the bleeding out of time. That was a great phrase there, Rex. Yeah, it's interesting to me how, you know, time, the almost like fear of time changes our thinking. I did like that mermaid became a land lover, dreary depth of cobalt, ocean bedrock relinquished, siren song clear on terra firma. You know, it's interesting to me how it's almost like, you know, we don't have a willingness to move forward to time, but it calls us anyways, and no matter where we are. I also really like begin the big wine, slave to sensuality's rhythm, ruby electric ride, minute harlequin, can't stop the clock, laser ball, static spills over, ensnare saints, savant, and servant. There's a line that touches really well on the whole idea that, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Time passes. Time finds you. It enslaves you. It you know, changes you. Or like the idea that, you know, there is no stopping the changes that come with time. Well, so just really intriguing lines throughout. Wonderful use, as always, of some alliteration, silken smooth sensuality beguiles smiles in the face of adversity. I feel like there's something about those lines that line there that speaks on the idea of somebody who has plastic surgery and, you know, knows that, you know, they, for that brief moment, if not forever, have temporarily kept time away from their face. And of course we know it won't last, you know, but that's what it makes me think of. So just, like I said, intriguing, strong right, great alliteration and wonderful imagery. So very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Deathbringer by Weaver of Dreams. SoundCloud.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Find that. And here we go.
Delphus, the Deathbringer, never deviates from the rules. Those routines are her train tracks. They take her onwards to the next foul soul. She's deaf to screams of panic and pain as another life is lost to greed, lust, and the spiral downwards. She arrives at the next collection point to see her first love, a man she has not thought about for years. This wasn't right. What can have changed him that he deserves to be damned? She finds him in a dungeon, an aura around him black as night. His face suffused with desire, he whips a young girl unmercifully. Her screams now reduced to whimpers as the blood runs red, adds to his pleasure. Tearing off her clothes, he satisfies his lust, then kicks her and leaves, not caring if she is alive or dead. Sickened by what she's witnessed, Zelphus suddenly senses evil. All is not what it seems. There is another looking through his eyes. A demon lurks inside him, moving and using him like a marionette. This is something within her remit. Time to give the demon a surprise. She follows the figure that is not Sam through the streets to his home. She breaks in and puts her hands around his throat. He seems dazed. Looking into the eyes of the man she loved, only the demon looks back. Leave or I'll kill him, and you'll be trapped within his dead body always. The demon has lost. It starts to leave Sam's body. As black smoke erupts from Sam's mouth, from her DB toolkit she takes a flask. The magic spells and herbs inside it trap and hold the hapless demon. Sam is himself again, but before he can speak, he hears, "Don't ask."
Wonderful read, and right there, Weaver, thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. She wrote to the same painting that Beatnik did. Again, just a strong story. I like that she chose the name Delphus for her character, after the Delphi, the oracle of ancient Greece. I thought that was a great choice. I really felt like she brought a real strong sense of humanity to this character. The idea that she had once loved. I really like, sickened by what she's witnessed, Delphus suddenly senses evil. All is not what it seems. There is another looking through the eye. The demon looks inside him, moving and using him like a marionette. There is something within her remit, time to give the demon a surprise. To me, it tugs back and forth on the emotion, because first she comes across a lover that she had missed and then realizes this lover is possessed by a demon. I don't know. I also really liked... And I found it slightly like humorous for me anyways, where as black smoke erupts from Sam's mouth, because, Sam being one of the brothers from Supernatural, the show. So all of a sudden it's got this like supernatural type, what do they call that when fans write fan fiction? It's got a fan fiction type feel from her DB toolkit. That actually makes me think of, I went to a museum in California, and San Diego, California, and it actually had a vampire hunter's toolkit, like what somebody would keep back in like Victorian times to be able to hunt and kill vampires. So that's what it made me think of. I like how this is that very entertaining, and I don't even know what the right word for it is, but there's a certain type of dark novels, dark rites that I feel like this fits into a certain genre. I just can't think of the right name for it. But I like the combination of action and humor brought in together to create the dynamics of this heroine and her story. So very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the Deathbringer had me thinking of the Death Dealer from Underworld. She who was the one who took care of the beast, brought them down in their tracks, the vampire that kills Lycan. So I thought that was pretty good, because well, she actually kind of hits that very same mold, the full black outfit, although the sword is a whole hell of a lot bigger than the ones she used in the Underworld films. It hits on that basic sword. And again, you hit on that note. She's the one dealing death or bringing death, as the Weaver's got here. But the idea of culling that which is not for this world, but that also kind of the last two stanzas, but where she takes it into her own hands of taking care of this one that she knows of, and maybe risk her her entity to the point of actually trying to save someone instead of dispatching both, because it doesn't matter, even though he's been rid of the demon, still carries the taint of that which the demon did in his body, so that might come back to haunt.
Oh, great observation. Maybe there'll be a part two. Yeah, yeah, very true. Cool comment there, Rex. All right, and what do you got for us next?
Bloodlust Goddess by Betty. That one's yours.
Okay. Okay, I couldn't remember, so I was waiting for you to say. All right. Bloodlust Goddess by Betty Page. It goes like this. Howling black midnight, full blue moon, illuminates vivid shimmering. Icy cold, dark slate, emerge goddess of bloodlust, seeking her revenge. Men have betrayed her, took advantage of her land. Blood spills, swift crimson. Highlander's sweet death. Whoever betrayed her queen, all warriors dead. Their souls rise in debt to pay back damage they've caused, forever her slaves. Royal dark army arises every midnight from this lake of death. In darkened forest howls not of wolves but of men, scream as they bleed out. End poem. All right. Rex, your thoughts on Betty's wonderful dark poem.
She bites at betrayed her queen and what was it? The Highland? Where did they find that? Highlander's sweet death. Whoever betrayed her queen or warriors dead. Little hints at Bloody Mary, Queen of Scots, and her brief and mutilating reign. But this kind of walks in a little darker angle. Royal dark army arises every midnight from this lake of death. Well, when you spill that much blood, yeah, I guess you can't call it a lake of death because you're mutilated quite a bit. And the angle here is kind of hits on that. Also, the Red Queen from Alice in Wonderland, the dark visage of one who lusts for head and one who just has no problem destroying those she thinks has done her wrong.
I like that. I like that. Great observation there. And yeah, I like that you pointed out the A.N. And it's very cool that she put in there Queen Mary of Scots and Lord of the Rings, medieval fantasy inspired, and I can definitely see that. I think this is an excellent dark rite. I really like how visceral she got with her imagery. Goddess of bloodlust seeking her revenge, blood spills swift crimson. You know, I like how she put in kind of the necromancer type feel to it, you know, or the necromancer, like, I don't know. Is there a different word for female necromancers that you know of, Rex? Or are they all called necromancers, no matter what?
I think a necromancer is a necromancer no matter what.
Okay. That's what I'm thinking, too. I may research later, but that for now, that's what I'm thinking. But, yeah, I like how – and she – but she also shows kind of almost like a strength of this woman character. Like, she's a killer. She's out for bloodlust. But she's a killer because she's been betrayed. Her queen has been betrayed. And you see the way that her anger comes out. And then bringing in the idea of raising the dead and making them her slave like the necromancer would. I thought that was a really nice touch. Their souls rise in debt to pay back damage they've caused forever her slaves. I thought that was a powerful part and just really showed the extent that this character was willing to go to in order to extract her revenge. So just an excellent dark right. And very well done. All right. What do we got next?
Mistress Lazuline by Sapphire Rose. Eyes trace deprecating lengths across long passageways and betrayals of time. Shadowing spheres from cusp to cusp, degrading movements, truth's mirror reflects. Cold, calculating orbs bind me to her dark aura. Hot flesh turns an icy shade of forbidding steel, leaving no body part untouched by her faculty. Pastel tears rain down upon frostbitten nerves. Dusty shadows handcuff me before her. I worked an arousal equally. She's part sinner, part saint, compelled to break you and love you just the same. I will descend with her into the riddling world of her ravenous hunger. Possessing fingertips traced my seraphic jaw, soft enough, commanding enough. I cannot look away from her, for she is aware that I am playing with fire and ice. Deep between her fissures are hidden weaknesses, but it fades in the face of inflicting pain and degradation. It is why she's a cold lover. She's plagued, cursed. She demands payment from the most ruthless of men. She will make you hurt, so good, or she will bleed you out, for she is a mistress of tacit control. The rising melancholy of this siren song is never to be forgotten as long as there is breath in one's lungs and a beat in one's heart. She will own you and all you encompass. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I like that Sapphire decided to write this, not from the point of view of the woman in the painting, but from the point of view of a man who knew her, who had studied her, who had, you know, fallen under her spell. I thought Mistress Lazuline was really a great title. And I think she captured how, like, there's a certain sadness to the look of the woman, and yet you can't help but feel, like, look at it and feel there's a kind of trickery within the sadness a falseness, a way to manipulate. And Sapphire's, how she brings in this character who narrates the story, but, you know, and I will descend with her into the riddling world of her ravenous hunger, possessing fingertips, trace my seraphic jaw soft enough, commanding enough. I cannot look away from her, for she's aware that I am playing with fire and ice. And I like that Sapphire brings in that duality. You know, I know Aphasiana and Babbler get a big kick out of you're mentioning she is both sinner and saint, but then also he brings up not only sinner and saint, but playing with fire and ice. She can, you know, burn you and then, you know, with absolute, you know, desire and then turn cold. You know, I also, a wonderful dark tale. of control. Deep between her fissures are hidden weaknesses, but it fades in the face of inflicting pain and degradation is why she's a cold lover. She's plagued, cursed. I like how in that part you become aware. She gives a hint that there are weaknesses to this woman. She can't love. You know, she's incapable of true love. And she uses that for her power, and yet it could be used against her. I like how in the end, Sapphire chose to all capitalize the word own. She will own you and all you encompass. So there will be nothing in your life that you will control. It will all be about her and what she wants. So great choice in the representation of how we view this character. And also I have to say, I think great choice for Sapphire to choose you to read this. So very cool there. And excellent write. And Rex, you did do an amazing job of reading that. Your thoughts?
Well, the thought of Lazuline was a nice touch, considering the color for the pick itself, with the jewelry and the crown, kind of a lapis lazuli blue. So that hits well. The thought with leaving the siren angle until the last stanza was smart. It just adds a little bit more, because the fire and ice angle is one and the same, because there is ice that will burn. So that kind of hits on the same note of just how frigid the essence is, even though the fire she wells from men thought of the siren song to begin with. The part saint, parts in a part saint angle, compelled to break you and love you just the same, that walks right into the alignment with the siren as well, as they will drown you and take you down to their realm as part of the game they play. But hers is cold. She's definitely that frozen angst that liquefies and takes the moment from what she wants. And whether she's sad or not, that might just be a kind of extra little tidbit to wow one's eyes into the thought of, hey, I can make her happy, take away the tears, but no, that doesn't work. It's just part of her visage, that which she used as well. And demands payment. The hurt, yes, bleed out. She's mistress of task control. That comes with the icy bearing that she holds. And the deep freeze is where you go.
I like that. I like that. Those are some great observations. What I particularly liked about your comment, Rex, is you mentioned that how the blue works in the coloring for both fire and ice. Because it does. It has that the look of the blue flame, but it also has the blue that you think of as when something's very cold. And also I like how you mentioned that, you know, it's all part of her facade, the sadness that draws people in. They're saying, well, maybe I can help her, but it's all part of the facade, all part of the trap. Great comment there, Rex. And what do you got next?
Credit the Princess by Stelina. And there's a sound cry for that, too.
There is. And before I push play, I would like to mention that, Arcana actually made this SoundCloud for Stelina, so she wrote the poem, and the reading on the recording is going to be his voice. And so, with that being said, let me find that, and here we go.
Immortal beauty is her endeavor. 10,000 virgins she has devoured. Their pale, sweet limbs she had to sever. For her necromancy to be empowered. Stalking stealthily in twilight lands, crunching bones beneath her tread, lifeblood spilling from her hands. As in her wake lies a trail of the undead. Walling weakly in pallid moonlight, stripped of flesh and vital breath, mercilessly scorning their piteous plight, she denies the sweet release of death. Predatory princess, reaper of humanity, pillaging parasitically without contrition, leaving our world bereft of sanity and strewn with carnage midst her mission.
Are you mutating and talking?
Oh, shoot. I totally forgot I had muted myself. Oh, my gosh. Well, because it was a longer recording. A lot of times during longer recordings, I like to mute myself. And I had said, great read, Arcana, wonderful write, Stelina. And then thank you to both of you. And then I said, Rex, your thoughts. And there was silence. I said, Rex, are you gone or are you mutating? And then I realized when you said something that, no, I was the one mutating. So anyways, your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it's a shift. But the Predator Princess hits on that angle, yes. But the voice kind of also hits on, what's her name? Elizabeth Bathory from back in 1500s, I think it was. She who bled out youthful girls for her fiendish delights, the right to bathe in them, to her necromancy, so to speak. Well, I like that angle. But also takes it in a trail of undead, so there's that sort of a, not actually bleeding them out, but actually turning them into something else other than just another dead body strewn across the landscape. So the Reaper of Humanity is someone who's creating a virtual landscape, not just carnage, but undead things that do her bidding in actually bringing more of these useful things to her land. Although she offer up a few thousand things as well as the sweet limbs she had to sever. So she does do a bit of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. I like that you brought up Elizabeth Bathory, because you're right, that does show in the first line, immortal beauty is her endeavor. You know, the idea of a woman who will do anything and everything to find that immortal beauty. I liked the read in this. I thought choosing a slow pace was a good idea. Very visceral imagery, and not only imagery, but wonderful use of sound, crunching bones beneath her tread. That was a really great way to show us, because in order for bones to be crunching as somebody's walking, there has to be a whole lot of them. So that sound gives us that imagery of how many dead are strewn before her. I also thought this had a nice like rhyme and flow to it. Some great use of alliteration. Really like predatory princess, reaper of humanity, pillaging parasitically without contrition. I liked pillaging parasitically, not only for the alliteration, but also because of the imagery it brings up and the depth it goes into this, the evil of this character. Like, this isn't a character that's getting revenge because she was wronged, because her family was wronged, because her land was wronged. This is a character whose goal is simply to, you know, whatever serves her, and if it's bloodshed, so be it. She's out for herself. She only wants what is going to help her rise to power. And if that's a mission of carnage, then so be it. So just an excellent dark right and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
It is A Warrior's Death by Julie Buck, and I guess this one's going to have to be mine, considering what it's for. All right. A Warrior's Death by Julie Buck. A century I have waited on this fiery rock. My face has morphed into an angry crag. My long hair, gray, my black wings open halfway, and you are fated to feel my sword, a single swift slash to your throat. The war on the horizon sets the sky aflame. 100 years I've salivated on this dark cliff, devoted only to your neck and to watching it bleed. You vile whore of whores, it's you I blame for this. It's you for showing no need. It's you for cowardly choosing the abyss. Die now, my sword's bloody blade shall inhale your last sinful breath. You know your warrior death will forever live in hell. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really felt like you got really into this character. spot on, just spot on. What a wonderful dark story, right, by Julie. I, again, big fan of a dark story with a first-person narrative. And there's a real certain type of passion within these lines. And I like that she opens up with, a century I've waited on this fiery rock. My face has morphed into an angry crag. My long hair gray, my black wings open halfway, and you are fated to feel my sword. You just really, and as it intensifies, it goes on, the anger intensifies. You know, it's almost like at first, the opening lines, there's nothing particularly violent about it. You know, it's intriguing. It's very well written, but it's as it moves on, you know, and you are fated to feel my sword, a single swift slash. And then even on further, you vile whore of whores, not just a whore, whore of whores. It's you I blame for this. It's you for showing no need. It's you for cowardly choosing the abyss. And then the fact that she put I like that she put the last few lines in bold to really emphasize the increased intensity of of anger and the anger at the betrayal, you know, because I get the impression that these were two who were once in love, once a couple, and there's that sense of betrayal and that sense of, you know, how truly angry one could become if they had to wait centuries before they could finally someone who not only betrayed them in love, but betrayed them to an eternity of hell. So just a powerful, dark tale and very well done. And Rex, you did an excellent job of reading that. Your thoughts?
Well, the picture kind of hints at a Vlad Tepes-type creature, a Drakuru, son of the dragon. And well, the language kind of hits that note of thought, too, the son of the dragon. And that idea of waiting 100 years, yeah, that hits on the note of being dark and angry enough to live long and prosper until you do come to that point where you meet once again that vile horror force because of the darkness that has been bled, the anger that has been issued. And I don't know what the cowardly act was, but it's hard enough for those last few lines to sink deeply within. Probably won't be the neck, but it will be a nice, painful death. Maybe a few lopped off limbs and maybe the head as a last thought. Now you may die.
I like that thought. And I hadn't really thought about what that creature was. I guess I thought some sort of angel of death. But I found it a fascinating painting. So I like that you brought that up. You know, honestly, but it doesn't really fit with the poem. But if I were to read a line alone, it's you for cowardly choosing the abyss. I would think of someone who chose suicide, you know, but I don't think that quite fits with the poem, but that's what that individual line would give me. But, you know, I guess to me that really, you know, speaks on what was important to the character in the idea that, you know, whatever they were facing, they should have faced it together, and this person didn't. So, but great observations there, Rex. Great comment. And what do you got for us next?
Circle in a Straight Line by Patrick Childs. It is in our struggle that we find our purpose. It is in our nature that dwells below the surface. It is in our beliefs that we find reflection. It's in our moral compass that we seek direction. So much time spent searching for an answer you may never find. You thought you asked the right question. You followed all the right signs. Then wound up where you started, going in circles in a straight line, sailing on chartered waters in the wilderness of your mind. It is in our labors that we seek out true worth. It is in one's memory that we bury in the earth. It is in our society that we grow our deeds. It is in our life's legacy that we plant the seeds. So much time spent searching for an answer you may never find. You thought you asked the right question. You followed all of the right signs. Then wound up where you started, going circles in a straight line, sailing on uncharted waters in the wilderness of your mind. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. excellent write by Patrick. Great rhyme, as always. I like the irony of the title, Circle in a Straight Line. You know, not really feeling like you know where you're going. I like that this covers so much, like, idea of the answers that we seek, the searching that we do. You know, so much time spent searching for an answer you may never find. You thought you asked the right question. You followed all the right signs. Then wound up where you started, going in circles in a straight line. I like that idea of how we often manage to get ourselves lost. emotionally, mentally, like the idea that we do so much seeking and seeking oftentimes of looking for the wrong things. Let's see, what else? That we seek our true worth. It is in one's memories that we bury in the earth. It is our society that we grow our deeds. You know, to me, I really feel like those lines in that stanza speak, you know, on the idea of that we don't find ourselves necessarily looking inside ourselves, but we find ourselves by doing good for others, you know, and sailing on uncharted waters in the wilderness of your mind. You know, I think too often, and I think inner reflecting is a good thing. I really do. I think getting to know yourself is a good thing, but, you know, I think sometimes people become so lost in thinking that they are completely what they need to focus on, that they forget that there is a society of people out there who need help. There's opportunity out there to plant seeds of love and life and good deeds. You know, so just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts.
It's all in the repetition of that second stanza as an adjunct to both these little thoughts of it's in our struggle, labors, whatever the thought is. Those are just the angles of that which we do. That second stanza repeated as a fourth is important because of what it offers up. It's a note to the fact that we forget. So then we repeat the angles of ignorance and stupidity that gets turned around. So that's where you get the going in circles and a straight line. You think you're going forward, but you're always coming back around to the point where you are repeating that which you've done before, the same mistakes. Why? Because you didn't learn anything. That reflection meant nothing if you don't take in what you learn, what has happened, and learn from it, so you don't repeat that mistake again. And that's what the straight line is.
I like that. I like that. Great observation on the repeating of the same mistakes because we just refuse to learn from them. So excellent comment there. And what do you got for us next?
Abandoned Dead by Ilex Ata. You got to read sometime. Otherwise, I'm going to
Oh, okay. All right. I suppose, yep. Abandoned Dead by Ilex Ata. And it goes like this. Salt water dropped on my grave, fake sorrow dripping from the dry eyes of the ones who threw me in. Trading feigned grief for public sympathy, no pity spared to the listening deceased. But you should have known better. No mere dirt could hold my rage, eons of grief, anger, mistreatment towards those such as I, waiting for fresh bones strong enough to bear an old age burden, this final feud we now represent. You with your sycophants and false prophets, patting each other on the back with all actions excused as the words of an absent divine, stoning with your words any who dare defy tradition. Live lives dedicated towards honesty of the heart. Practice love outside your encircling bounds, killing in the name of a god with their back turned on your actions against me and my unstoppable army of the abandoned dead. Grievances exponentially multiplied as innumerable victims join our ranks. Change will come, our black wave washing away your gilded white. We will see who remains standing in the end. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, that bottom end of this, our black wave washing away your gilded white, that's kind of that is either an angle of kind of a turn back in on it itself, because it hits on the sycophants, false prophets. There is a notation to destruction, stoning, and killing in the name of a god with their back turned on your actions. And it hits at the thought of duplicity from the bows in power, to the point that they think that they hold the shield of white, when actually they are the black shield, so to speak. And the black wave is actually black because of the pit of darkness they come from. The fact that most of them have been abandoned for dead, left for dead, or actually bled out because of with the vein of thought that they offer, the callous words, the misused actions, the thought, hey, we can terminate this people just with words. There's a kind of note to how the duplicity in some people has walked across the internet in canceling for no other reason, because, hey, they think and see things differently from you. No, we can't have that. You have to go.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, those are some great observations there, Rex. I like the not only physical darkness in this, but the emotive darkness. I like how the first stanza brings up trading feigned grief for public sympathy. There's this whole idea of those false emotions brought up that, seeking for sympathy when there was never any for the person that now lays in the grave. There is this idea to me of pointing fingers, of judging people. I like this all the way through, but especially killing in the name of a god with their back turned on your actions against me and my unstoppable army of the abandoned dead. I like that the imagery of the abandoned dead. And to me, I feel like that abandonment happened before death itself, that they're abandoned dead because they were abandoned in life. So just an excellent dark rite and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Tamed by time, Tata. She has a book and works for our master. He found her useful as she gets results so much faster. All his minions are but animals of the wild. She will break them and mold them up like bad parents with a child. My master doesn't accept difference or tolerate being observed, and she, his weapon, will bend your will to truly deserve his bigger picture, his ends that justify her means. Celebrated from pulpits and nays and tongues in teams. Once broken and tortured to mental acceptance, compliance will have you bent, twisted, and receptive for entrance. She then penetrates her truths within your body and your soul. You poor little orphan, you wretched wild child soul. Come hither, let her penetrate your mind, get under skin, and blow you in pretense of kind. You need to be tamed, remade in his image, their image, trained and interrogated until you find. But careful now, they have lost the way to attach. Emotional, devoid, each planned flawed they hatch. And when they never get it right, getting nowhere, they turn. She turns and points her sword and stares. You there, untamed brute. Your time is up, and we are done with you to boot. Get out of our tiny little shoal. From now on, you're a leper, a burning, stinking ghoul. I read another man's poem and saw the insidious crime of traffickers and their victims lost in the venom of life's bright vintage wines. Not so unreal as it hasn't been done before. Thomas, you are sociopathic. They celebrate you now even more. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and an excellent write by Time Teller. I like how he starts out with she has a book and works for our master. Especially the line she has a book, you know, really shows us that, you know, this is a woman of some knowledge, and this is a woman who can control people with the knowledge and the power she has, and yet she's not completely in control of her own life. I like wonderful dark tale. My master doesn't accept differences or tolerate being observed. I think my master doesn't accept differences. While it makes for a great dark fantasy, right, line, it also works well in the idea of the observations of how society often does not tolerate differences. And what else? I like that it gets more and more into the woman herself. And let's see. Where else? I mean, it's great all the way through. Then it gets the end. You there, untamed brute, your time is up and we are done with you to boot. Get out of that tiny shoal. I know there's something about this that makes me think of the gladiators in ancient Rome, and that one part, like the idea that someone served their purpose. You know, they entertained the masses, you know, without ever really, you know, necessarily thinking for themselves. They just, you know, entertained the masses with their brutality. And now it's done and it's over with. Just an absolutely intriguing write with great use of dark imagery and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's cultish. Now you work a cult. You debase, break down, and wash out that which was, so you can actually inject that which you want them to be, which is obedient, subservient, and that which will do as told. His bigger picture, his ends that justify her means, celebrated from pulpits and bays and tongues and teams. That calls forth the fact that there are way too many of these people out there, and one should be wary of them because they will undermine the thought of society itself and the thought to the nuclear family, because that's what draws in on this. And then even if you do not break or bend to that actual end of will, you will be done away with one way or another, or another, whether it's you're left out as a leper, a stinking ghoul, so to speak, or you're deemed sociopathic and have to be dealt with in another different way, because that sociopathy they claim that you are is actually what they are, because their means is an end to something that is the full breakdown of everything until it walks in their shoes and their shoes alone.
I like that. Cool thought there. And yeah, you definitely could see that idea of breaking down wills one way or another. So great observations. All right. And what do we got next?
How little the shallow do know, by Flipsider. That was yours.
All right, maybe I have to refresh my page. It's not on there, Rex.
Yeah, it is. Oh, wait a minute. Or did I not?
I don't know, but I refreshed my page. Okay. There.
Yes.
There we go. All right. How little the shallow do know is by Flipsider. And it goes like this. Amazed at how little the shallow do know, thoughts existing so futile, at the bastard kind moving slow. Reach now deep inside at what you now see. She will strip you of all your pride, leaving you worthless as on bended knee. Gaze at her celestial beauty as she strips your putrid soul away. Fatality, your very only duty, skin coming off fully stripped before even knowing today. End poem. Wow, that's an excellent Dark Rite by Flipsider. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I do like that back end. Fatality, your very only duty, skin coming off fully stripped before even knowing today. That's a little twisted thought through seriality in that. But the one before that, it kind of hits on that note of fully devolving one. She will strip you of all your pride, leaving you worthless as on bended knee. It's almost like being left at the altar, so to speak. That picture does kind of hint at maybe a darker side of the bride of the devil, so to speak.
I like that. I like that. The left at the altar, the bride of the devil. And there was a kind of a seriality type feel to the end lines with skin coming off fully stripped. I did like how this got increasingly visceral. And first stanza, all three stanzas were great, but it was interesting to me how the first stanza almost made like a social commentary on, the shallow thinking, amazed at how little the shallow do know, thoughts existing so futile, at the bastard kind moving slow. I just really feel like there's this kind of anger and sadness towards those whose thinking is shallow in the way that, it's always about them. It's never about, taking care of others or taking care of the earth. And it's almost to me like the second two lines are that punishment for that shallow thinking. So that's why I feel like all three connect really well, is stanza one presents the problem that brings the grief and the anger, and is almost like the sin presented, and then the last two stanzas are the punishment presented. So just an excellent Dark Rite and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
A God's One Night Stand by Thomas B. I woke up with the world in my arms. Dawn crumbled against my chest as the aromas from pollution snarled into my lungs. The sudden rise of a sense of self-destruction began to beguile me with despondency. Delicate senses of despair curled their lips, nibbled on my ear with growing desperation. When I went to bed, it had been verdant plains, mountains touching heavens and rivers, flush with life, gathering life, and all the fruits ripe, waiting to be plucked and savored. She twirled in the light and danced on my heart. I was ready to stir galaxies to adorn her breast. Now pleasure was replaced with pressure. I could feel the plate grinding against my spine, shoving up tortured granites, allowing eruptions, orgasms of magma layering pain upon agony, steaming waterways, and coating river bottoms with glassy obsidian as flames ripped through the forest. Earth smiled, broken teeth, blackened eyes, centuries of beauty torn down to please intelligence, a world and its gardens, a world and its rich quilts, flora and fauna competing to create an Eden, despoiled because of one species was granted self-awareness, a brain sparked by a sudden sense of self, creates a mind to hold itself apart, claim superiority. I woke up. I could see the end. The flames were growing. I couldn't be there for the end. I turned away, stepped from the starry night to quantum yet to be expressed, allowing wings to beat out waves of dark matter, allow the universe to stretch itself to collapse, anything to escape the heat of my tears. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. An excellent write by Thomas B. The title of God's One Night Stand really makes me think of, you know, like ancient Greek mythology, where gods were often having affairs. Let's see, got a lot of strong lines in here. But I like how this is, it has that kind of dark sensuality to it, but it's almost like the idea of a god falling in love with, I don't know, like the earth itself. And let's see here. Earth smiled, broken teeth, blackened eyes, centuries of beauty torn down to please intelligence, a world and a garden, a world and its rich quilt. I like that in the idea. To me, it speaks on how, like, Earth has gone through an abusive relationship, a relationship with a narcissist. And humanity themselves is that narcissist. Let's see, what else? She twirled in the light and danced on my heart. I was ready to serve galaxies to adorn her breasts. That is just an absolutely stunning line. I woke up, I could see the end, the flames are growing. I couldn't be there for the end. I turned away, stepped from starry night to quantum, yet to be expressed, allowing wings to beat out waves of dark matter. You can really feel this. To me, that whole idea of a god who loved an earth, who loved a people, and then watch them just destroy themselves and turn their back. It also kind of makes me think in the whole idea of turning your back on someone like because they won't give up their ways that are destroying them, you know, the addictions or whatever, you know, just saying, you know what, I can no more help you. I can't keep pulling you out. I can't keep helping you if all you're going to do is destroy everything beautiful that I give you. So just a really powerful and emotive, right, thought-provoking, and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful job of reading that. Your thoughts?
Kind of hits on two notes. God speaking in the poem, but also there was a piece in here. Third stanza down hits on the point of Earth speaking itself. Now pleasure was replaced with pressure. I could feel the plates grinding against my spine, shoveling up tortured granites, allowing eruptions, orgasms of magma, layered pain upon agony, steaming mortal waste and curling river bombs, glassy obsidian as flames rip through forest. Now that's the Earth itself speaking. And then going back to God offering up an earth smile, broken teeth, blackened eyes, centuries of beauty torn down to please intelligence. And then the back end of this was turning his back on humanity, so to speak. But yet he need not do that because the earth itself does quite a bit in conjunction. Every time things seem to be at a point where nothing could be stood, something does happen, and that all works within the triangle of years that walks between this planet, the Sun, and Jupiter. And it goes in 11-year shifts, 100-year shifts, 25,000-year shifts, 100,000-year shifts, and it gets turned over once more. And those days shall come again.
I like that. Great observations there, Rex. Very cool. All right. What do you got for us next?
Thorns by Cassia F.
All right. Thorns by Cassia F. And it goes like this. In darkness surrounded between voices of wolves, the crows settle next to my gown. Sadness covers me. Illusion swells. Sorrow of bleeding heart unseen. My drunkenness, black dress, embraces the cruel hawks. Eyes wrapped with the thunder, voices abide solitude. I choose. Moon glows surrounding the past. Melancholy sings tunes. As I wrapped my hands, counting each droplet in dark red, my mind lost upon the crowns of thorns, weaved with dirt of dead roses, life in spirals, twirled in tornado voice, lone start fallen, broken, I sacrifice loneliness that curves the soil with tears of a pink rose, her stern cuts my core. I no longer belong. Love swam away, only duality where dark clouds aligned. Here's my melody of melancholy, the anchor attached to my own self. I see nothing. I know nothing. I just am the bleeding thorn. End poem. That was absolutely beautiful. Wonderful use of imagery. And your thoughts, Rex?
The idea of a plucked rose surrounded by werewolves, and then the crows settle next to my gown. There's an idea of pecking in the sort of feeding, and bleeding heart unseen, my drunkenness, black dress embraces the cruel hawks, eyes wrapped with thunder, voice abide, solitude I chose, moon. So the idea, well, from then on down, it is all about the thought of bleeding out in the moment, so to speak. I sacrifice loneliness, I curse the soul with tears, the pink rose, her stem cuts my core. And then the thought, I no longer belong, the anchor attached to my own self, I see nothing, I know nothing, I am just a bleeding thorn. And it's the idea of death in the moment, pain.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. I like that. There's also to me kind of a sense of loneliness. And you know, I definitely see the death, and I think it's honestly, it almost seems to be about suicide, about a death chosen. I chose, you know, my mind lost upon the crowns of thorns, weave with dirt of dead roses. I like that they use, instead of crown of thorns, crowns of thorns. Like there was more than one, almost as if there was more than one person placing that weight. It feels like kind of like the idea of being bullied by the crowd. You know, I no longer belong, love swam away, only duality where dark clouds align, here's my melody. You know, there's such a feeling of abandonment, such a feeling of giving in to that darkness, to where you no longer feel or have any acknowledgement of the human emotions inside you, but rather have just become nothing more than that bleeding thorn. So just a powerful rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
This is a dark rite, right? By Lawrence 67. The Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and His Homie Albie in Is a Dog Art. Right? Hey, Nigel, what you doing? Thinking about entering this into the darkness contest, and I'm going over these pictures. It's dark art. Oh, I once knew a guy named Art. Yeah? What was his claim to fame? Well, Art could really fart. His fart was art. You are stupid. Now look at this photo, number one. She got some big milk jugs. They look heavy. You think that's why she's crying? Idiot. How about this, number two? Hey, look at that. That's Skinny Vinny in the back waving at us. Hey, Skinny, what's up? Dumbass. And Paul.
I do enjoy Lawrence 67's humor and his ability to, you know, he brings his characters to us, and I appreciate that. Great read there, Rex. I like your creation of the different voices. You know, it's always fun to hear the back and forth dialogue of Alfie and Nigel and their observations. It's got just a wonderful, like, twisted humor that's great fun. And, you know, I did like the irony in the humor of she got some big milk jugs. They look heavy. You think that's why she's crying? It could very well be. And I like that because, you know, a lot of it's always interesting how a lot of fantasy art really makes sure the women's cleavage is shown off. So I think that really, I like those lines for making fun of that. You know, I don't know if I would necessarily call this a dark ride, but you know what? I liked it. It amused me. It gave me a smile. So very well done. Oh,
well,
and your thoughts, Rob.
This is a dark ride, right?
Yeah.
And then I thought, this is a dark art, right? Right? Okay. I see. I like Alfie and Nigel. They do give me a nice claim to the funny, because it hits on the dry thoughts of these two characters so well. Except Nigel's really not quite. He's just the what's the word I'm using? He's the foil in the moment, offering up idiot, dumbass. And such, because Alfie's the one who's got the main voice, and he's offering up his own stupidity. So, yes, Nigel, you got it on right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's great the way the two characters' personalities play off of each other. So, great comment there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
Conquered King returns. By Wayne Dent and SoundCloud.
All right, here we go.
This poem is called Conquered King Returns. Conquered King's comeback campaign ignites, rejects radical rule, return to restore rights, announces to Academy, at last, not alone, tactical team trained to take back throne. Blazing battle began by burning and beheading, escaping enemy executed, each one regretting. Limbs and lifeless ladies left to lie, warlock wounded warrior wonders why. Advancing armies' arrows arrive like avalanche, catching confused citizens without a chance. Sad songs of survival, sick sights to see, friends, family, familiar, and old folks flee. time totals a tremendous tragic invasion, never knowing noble men's devastation. Days of death demands, drinking defeat, provincial powers prevail, parade in street. In.
Great reading right there, Wayne. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on this, right?
He had way too much fun with the first off because of the alliteration. And it does point to that thought of one who has been banished and comes back to return that which to normalcy, as opposed to the radicalism that is now has taken over and entrenched itself, and kind of hits on the note of the maraudings of the Vikings, the berserkers, the running amok in the motion, getting rid of all the bad actors, and then that sort of back at the end of Days of Death, the man's drinking defeat, provincial powers prevail, parade the street. Coming to terms with the those that sit under that provincial rule of disorder, chaos, and radicalism now get to celebrate past the thoughts of the destruction that has been wrought.
Absolutely. And you're right. You can tell he had a lot of fun with the alliteration. I like Conquered King Comeback Campaign Ignite. It's funny because it takes you back to like almost like a medieval or a fantasy time, but it also makes you think of like current times, you know, like with the word campaign, you know, you feel like somebody like, you know, the whole idea of somebody running for president. I really like the W choices, Waterlogged, Wounded Warrior, Wonders Why. I like that also, that there's that kind of idea, that sense of confusion, like of the masses not understanding what's going on. You know, that Days of Death demands drinking defeat, provincial powers prevail, parade in street. Those last lines, I just found them clever and fun because, you know, it made me think, I don't know, it made me think of the way people celebrate when their team wins the Super Bowl. So that amused me. And it also, you know, made me think of the whole idea of people who celebrate before the victory is actually secured. I think it was a very clever write and very well done. And, all right, what do you got for us next, Rex?
Home by Random Scribbler. That was yours.
All right. Home by Random Scribbler, and it goes like this. There she sat alone. Her only company was a bat flying lone. A lady in black, her beflowered head resting on a stone. Dark under the moonshine, a crooked bare tree stood behind. Seemed she a damsel in distress, whom I approached to ask if she needed assistance. Up at me, her eyes were glistening with tears like two orbs of shining pearls. Her face, pretty one, engulfed in sadness like a wilted flower taking its last breath. She said, "You know, it is my home, which is a peculiarly that beats everything else in its singularity. No windows, only one door, and there is more. This is the mystery, that it vanishes as soon as someone makes an entry." She asked, "Odd, is it not? Aren't you getting panicky? Shouldn't you be jittery? Haven't you just entered the place from where you cannot flee?" Then she grinned at me. "Where am I? with the one whom I found sitting alone in company of a bat, flying lone, a lady in black, a beflowered head resting, oh yes, on a tombstone. Under the moonshine, a crooked bare tree stood behind, oh yes, in the cemetery. I am there where I should be. She, along with the bat, has me for company, two damsels in distress. She could be approached to be asked if they needed assistance, really. Who would look up with eyes glistening with tears like orbs of shining pearls, indeed, whose faces, pretty ones, will be engulfed in sadness like wilted flowers taking their last breath, actually? Who would tell you that their homes are peculiarities which could beat everything else in their singularity, ominous, but right on the mark? Our home is an underground cave known as grave. Resting in peace we are, you bet, in the abode of the dead. End poem. All right, and Rex, your thoughts on this dark tale?
Well, the first part of this is a riddle. No windows, only one door, and there is more. This is the mystery that it vanishes as soon as someone makes an entry. Then she grinned at me. Where am I? And that's the riddle itself. The rest kind of hits on the noted thought of the double angle at the back end of this, on a tombstone in the cemetery, company, really, indeed, actually, ominous, known as a grave. Yes, we are resting in peace, you bet, in the abode of the dead. It's almost a joking aperitif to the back end of this, past the riddle itself, which I did find amusing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I like how this told the story through, as you said, the riddle and the answers of the riddle and the realization of, you know, first one is drawn in and then there's two of them and they're both, and at that point they become one and the same, two different entities but with the same job to draw in the next and the next and the next, you know, and so just really a wonderful dark write and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
In Blood at Night by R. Byron. She shall bring down hell fire, clutching his vest of lies. No king, no sire shall his fire dart fire. In darkness he rides at night. None shall see his putrid faces. By fist his world shall go, shall molest with every hand on this globe bowing. Like dominoes, men will fall. Like children losing marbles, a dungeon spear shall wound. Shape sword to cut shield for blow. Go speak with coldness, save its salt upon bronze beds. Too parted and too swollen, pouring and dying cities, called forth by breathing fire upon steeds unsavoring. Dungeons drawing omens. Sons of blind bachelors, groans of soiled oil, fugitives in a fallen land, slaying with broken breath. Dungeon spear confines, items traded for matching spurs, hints of grass of empty homes, like floating cargo upon a river, and spinning wheels of coaches to cracks in walls and tombs. A shadowy sleep as grown men weep, ciphers peek through chalice doors, serving the arm of iniquity, laying bruised crosses on foreheads, rivers, very deep, watery eyes, aged bottles of red wine poured, sacrifice and none to barter, pointing to an asylum, a battleground of ruins. Ambushed by yesterdays, burning a candle's last wick, from darker pastures as abandoned ships to into drifting sea, footprints mar the glow, snake tongue with sprinkles of cold dust, shipwrecks and bolden winds, sinks crumbling on the shore like hidden assassins in blood.
Great read there, Rex. This is an excellent Dark Rite by R. Byron. I like how this woman, this female character, is a punisher who brings, but not only physical punishment, but the punishment of madness, of the mind falling apart. I like that she references losing the marbles. Like children losing marbles, a dungeon spear shall wound, shape sword, cut shield for blow, go speak with coldness. And then sons of blind bachelors, a shadowy sleep as grown men weep. You know, to me, it does really truly to me speak on the idea of not only the physical punishment, but the punishment placed upon the mind. You know, the sense of probably, I would say, almost like an idea of overwhelming guilt, ambushed by yesterday's burning a candle's last wick from darker pastures as abandoned ships into a drifting sea. And I don't know, sense of guilt, because I think it could be taken a couple of different ways, but there's this idea of how the past wounds. And, you know, is it that sense of guilt that drives the mind crazy, or is it simply that it's not a sense of guilt, but rather what one has seen, as it says, pointing to an asylum, a battleground of ruins, and the idea of that when somebody faces the absolute horrors of war, of battle, what does it drive their mind to see and to deal with for the rest of their life? Wonderful visceral imagery, emotional, and I like that it delves into the psychological darkness. So I thought this was very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Snake tongue with sprinkles of gold dust. I think that's the most important line here, because there's that repeat from above, clutching his vest of lies. There's that notion of this is how the world shall end, as Sodom and Gomorrah doth fall. It goes out with a whimper instead of a bang, like hidden assassin in blood at night. Everything parts in its own time. Everything dies on the vine. Everything comes full circle.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. Great observations there, Rex. Great comment. And I think that line that you picked out about the gold tongue was a particularly strong one. So very well said there. And all right, I see we have one more left. So what do you got for us?
The darkest darkness I have seen is one of blindness in a dream by White Tiger. The darkest darkness I had seen is one of blindness in a dream, woke to blackness far and wide, as panic gripped me deep inside, paralyzed by primal fear, while trapped by skin both in and out. The light no longer gave direction, no one here to save me now. Will someone help? Is danger near? Will strangers stalk me over there? When space is dead, it's filled with fear, too scared to walk the empty air. When sight is veiled by endless dust, both dawn is damned and skies are dim, you pray, dream for a chance to feel the sunbeams gleam as day begins. I die to see the music play, would love to feel the colors too. I steal some views of rainbow rays, the dreams like these becoming true. And talk.
Great read there, Rex. And I'm glad to see White Tiger. It's been a while since I've seen any of his rights in the contest for the show. So very cool there. Wonderful rhyme and flow, wonderful meter to this, some nice use of alliteration. I like how this is about that inner fear, that ugliness, that fear that we hold inside ourselves, so that it's not something we can escape. But we beg for that help. We beg for that hope that, you know, we'll escape. Will someone help? Is danger near? Will someone stalk me over there? You know, there's that whole idea of when the lights are shut off, how our mind changes things and how our mind sees things and how we really want that music and we really want that color, but it's not coming through in our life because the mind of depression, of sadness, of, you know, just won't let it come through. So just a wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's all about the dream. The darkest darkness I have seen is one of blindness in a dream. You wake up blind in a dream, all you've got is darkness. And nothing emanates from there on out. Even though it's just a dream, the fear is paramount. And there is no one there to help except you yourself, because you're the only one in the dream. And you're blind because nothing else materializes. And both dawn is damned and skies are dimmed. You pray, dream for a chance to feel the sunbeams gleam as day begins. So there's that notion of waking up and wanting to feel that sunlight once more. And then that last stanza, I die to see the music play, would love to feel the colors too. I steal some views of rainbow rays, should dreams like these be coming true. There's that notion of on the back end of taking note of life once more instead of passing off the beauty that surrounds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. All right. We're on the back end of things. Thank you, as always, Rex, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Wichita Rick for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Join us later, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Make sure to check out the contest and topic boards put up by all our late night poets, including Rex's Rhythm and Rhyme, Digging into the Lyrics contest that he's running right now. And great show tonight, Rex. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night. And till next week.
Absolutely.